This conference is being recorded.
This is Luke Allison with CriticalBench.com, and I'm here with Eric Talma. Eric, how are you?
I'm good, Luke.
Just take a second and update the listeners. What have you been doing the past couple months? What's been going on in your life?
Well, for the year, competed and organized the 2009 Raw Unity Meet. That was in January. I then competed in the Clash of the Titans meet in Dallas, Texas at the Ronnie Coleman Fitness Expo. Currently, I am preparing for a series of single-ply meets. First one will be the APF Seniors down here in Palm Beach Gardens. You know, the APF is a multi-ply federation, but I'm going to go ahead and compete in single ply and use that as a tune-up for the USPF Nationals, which I will be doing out in Pasadena July 3rd.
Okay. Moving forward, just in case anyone doesn't know, you're going to run Raw Unity 2010. What is that and how is it different than things that people might be familiar with?
Well, the Raw Unity Meet started in 2007. It was my idea of trying to get together the best raw lifters from any and all federations. And many of the ideas stemmed out of my experiences competing in the WPO finals at the Arnold Classic. How it's different is that we are not a federation and the meet is unsanctioned. The Raw Unity Meet is a standalone meet that invites lifters from any and all federations to compete under one roof, under one set of rules, and the monies that I generate from the Raw Unity Meet continue to go back into the meet. It hasn't turned a profit yet. We're looking to do that in 2010. It looks as though the proceeds in 2010 are going to go towards benefiting an after-school program for Hillsborough County. So, in another aspect, that's how the meet is different. I don't keep any profits, any monies. I don't run the meet as a business. I run it as an outlet for talented raw lifters to come compete against the other best talented raw lifters. So my motivation for the meet may be a little bit different than perhaps, another federation or another meet in that it's not, we don't solely depend on anything financial related.
What does the planning and preparation look like for the event? Is it year-round? Is it a six-month cycle? Talk a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, the preparation, I guess it's kind of got two phases. There's kind of an off-season and an on-season. All year long, I'm constantly watching Powerlifting Watch, looking in Powerlifting USA, trying to see, what raw lifters stick out, which ones qualify for the Raw Unity Meet. And when we locate such lifters, I try to get in contact with that lifter and inform them about the Raw Unity Meet. So in that regard, there really isn't an off season. But it starts to get hectic about 6 months out, which is basically where I'm at right now. I'm currently putting together a newsletter for 2010 outlining where the event will be held, how much prize money will be given, so on and so forth. And probably about 3 months out from the meet, we're looking at September, October, I start to put many of my personal things aside, which for me is my metabolic typing business. I put that on the back burner, and all things Raw Unity go to the front burner. And this is where I am now communicating with the judges more heavily, with the lifters. We're starting to organize, plan, and prep for Raw Unity. I'm answering questions about the meet. I'm communicating with sponsors, trying to bring in more funds to generate more prize money. I'm working on advertising. Bud Light and BMF Sports does a tremendous job for us in terms of marketing and maintaining the website. So, you know, it really doesn't end, you know, for me. I'm constantly working year-round with issues that are related to Raw Unity, but it really starts to pick up about 3 months or so out from the event.
What is the importance of unification for powerlifting?
Well, the importance is to bring meaning back to calling yourself a national champion. You know, back in the 70s and even into the early 80s, if you said that you were the, you know, 220-pound class champion, that meant something to every single lifter in the sport. Today, there are many different 220-pound champions, ranging from all of the different federations to, you know, a single-ply champion in each one of those federations to a multi-ply champion in each one of those federations. So it just doesn't mean quite what it used to in years past. And that's not to take away from the guys and gals who are class winners in their respective federations. You know, they work hard. They win their championships outright. So, you know, the fact that they call themselves national or world champions or what have you is deserved. But, you know, what we're trying to do with Raw Unity is we're trying to give that title, as far as the raw lifting genre is concerned, we're trying to give it more weight. So, you know, our hope is, you know, in 2 years and or 5 years or sometime in the future, if a guy or a gal says, I won the, you know, whatever Raw Unity meet in this weight class, well, a lot of people will recognize that person as the one true raw champion nationally in that weight class.
It sounds like you're describing something that was similar to a problem that boxing had maybe 15 or 20 years ago, where they went to multiple sanctioning bodies and even very serious fans couldn't tell you who the world champion was or what the recognized weight classes were going to be called. Is that sort of a fear? I don't know if you even follow boxing, but does that make sense at all?
Yeah, actually, I used to follow boxing. Back when Mike Tyson was winning, I was into that because it was exciting to watch Mike box. But yeah, I mean, that's we're trying to make powerlifting not as confusing, not only for the lifters, but for any potential, you know, sponsors or, you know, folks that may have an interest in one day bringing it back on television. You know, it right now, if a guy calls himself, you know, a class champion, again, there's 15 other guys that can lay claim to the exact same thing. You know, I could only imagine as somebody who, you know, is just looking on the sport for the first time, how confusing, disoriented, and perhaps unprofessional that may seem. So, yes, this is similar to the growing pains that boxing has gone through, but I actually believe that powerlifting is much worse. Boxing at least had professional ranks, or has professional ranks, and there's a lot of money in boxing that can still bring it together. I think that could be done in powerlifting, but it, you know, it's, we don't have those kind of investors present right now. And if we do, you know, the guys that our organizing meets have been unable to get those folks involved. And that's another additional thing that I am working very hard on. We're working hard to try to get the meet as much national exposure as we can, because if we can get this event represented on a larger scope, if we can get it on television or get it in magazines or newspapers, what have you, and gain a little bit of steam, then we can maybe get some financial power behind it. Once you've got that, then your ability to draw the best lifters from any and all federations increases. At this point, you've also got guys and gals that are probably coming out of the woodwork, gym rats, we could call them, that, may not compete in powerlifting because of the current climate, or maybe they just, never considered it because they didn't know much about it. So I definitely understand and sympathize with the correlation you're drawing here, and we're trying to bridge the gap just as boxing did. I know that it's a huge task, but if you'd have asked the powerlifting community maybe 3-4 years ago if they thought even a meet like Raw Unity was possible, many folks may have said no. Well, this will be our third year. It's gaining momentum, and if it continues to gain momentum, we're going to continue to be able to do some really neat things for powerlifting.
Shifting gears a little bit, you've expressed an interest to get back into gear, single fly gear, probably this summer, maybe even this month. Why now for that?
Well, I think that especially as a meet director, as somebody who goes out and solicits or tries to encourage lifters of all genres and all federations to compete in Raw Unity, it's very important that I walk the walk. A talker doesn't have as much credibility as somebody who actually backs it up with action. So although I'm not a stranger to equipped lifting, when I got back into powerlifting in 2002, I competed in single-ply gear up until 2005. Then from 2005 to 2007, I competed in multiply federations. And since 2007, I've been raw. I think it's important for me to get back into single-ply to show lifters across the spectrum that I think it's good for the sport, for not only the top lifters, but any lifter, to kind of test the waters in other genres of powerlifting. There's more to a lifter than maybe just his raw totals or his single ply totals or his multi ply totals. When a guy can demonstrate that he, does well in more than just his area of comfort, we'll say, then I think a lot of lifters really respect that lifter that much more. And I'll give you a great example is Ryan Selle. Ryan has won the Raw Unity meet the last 2 years in the middleweight division. He's set an all-time record at 190 plus total. In addition to those outstanding achievements, Ryan has also posted the top single ply total here in the last year, like 2007 to 2008. I don't have stats in front of me, but I think he's totaled about 2,000 at 198. So when Ryan Selle's name comes up, the Raw crowd immediately says, well, that guy is super strong. Look at him. He's won the Raw Unity 2 years in a row. He's got an all-time record. Guy's a beast. Well, the single-ply crowd says, well, Ryan does the same thing here. He's totaled 2,000 or whatever it is he's done. And so the raw guys respect him. The single-ply lifters respect him. And I'm sure if you asked any kind of multi-ply lifter, they would at least acknowledge the point that if Ryan is so good in single and raw lifting, that if he tried his hand at multiply lifting, he'd probably be good at that too. So, you know, I look at that, and even myself, you know, I admire Ryan for what he's done, and I would like to lead in that same fashion. Now, although I'm not the top guy in my weight class like Ryan is, I'm up there. I've been in the top, you know, three or four for years now. So, you know, I've got a pretty good raw total right now, and my hope is to post a pretty good single ply total, you know, here in July at the USPF Nationals. And I encourage all lifters to do the same thing. I think it also creates an environment of empathy in that, you know, in our, you know, internet typing behind the keyboard, it's very easy to criticize, say, a guy that puts up a huge single ply total, where it's very easy for a raw guy to maybe say, well, you know, that's great, he's a geared lifter, let's see what he could do raw, you know, or, you know, put the shoe on the other foot. You know, you got a raw guy saying the same thing, or a single ply guy saying the same thing about a raw guy. So I think when a competitor in powerlifting goes and tries out, you know, raw lifting or single ply lifting or multi ply lifting, what you discover is that it's fiercely competitive wherever you go. And wouldn't it be neat if all the top guys led by example and went out and got totals in at least two or three of those genres? I think if more guys did that, if more guys did what Ryan Selle has done, then what happens is the sport stops beating up on itself as much. You stop seeing so much negativity on the internet forums, and you start to see more kind of unification coming. And as far as I'm concerned, unification doesn't have to come from raw unity. It would be great if we could get the best lifters to compete all three ways. You know, that's fine. I think many people would agree. But the reason why I believe this is so important and why I'm doing it and why I'm doing it now is because, as I stated earlier, I think a leader has to lead by example in order for guys to follow him. And so for me to just sit back and compete only raw, well, that never takes me out of my comfort zone. And to be truthful, I can't really sympathize anymore, even though I've competed single ply and multi ply. I'm out of touch with it right now. So I want to get back in touch with, you know, the trials and tribulations that those guys go through, you know, the weeks of trying to get a bench shirt to work right, or, you know, a squat suit or what have you. And when you've got more guys and gals competing in different genres of powerlifting, I think the whole attitude towards other genres of powerlifting becomes better, more positive, and as a whole, it's more positive for the sport.
That leads me to ask about what is the curve, the sort of performance curve, like in terms of getting back into gear after 2 years? You know, you said that it's important to do, but how does that fit into a larger cycle if, you know, you're going to be raw, and then you're going to be single ply, and then you would go back and forth? What does that experience, what is that like? How do you prepare?
Well, it's difficult, and I don't, you know, I don't know, I can't speak to, you know, exactly how to do it. You know, if I knew the tried and true way to do it, I guess I'd be close to a genius. I mean, for me personally, when I got back into a bench shirt, and I've only been in one for about 3 weeks now, it's been up and down. The very first time I got back into a bench shirt, I actually did really well with it. I grooved it pretty good. A lot of what I had learned as a single-ply lifter and as a multi-ply lifter years ago seemed to come back rather well, almost, you know, say like riding a bike. You know, you kind of never forget, sort of thing. But, you know, the very next week, I was all over the place. And then this past week, I trained in the bench shirt twice on Monday with Wade Hooper. He came to my coach, Dave Bates' place, and really worked with us on how to work the bench shirt. But then again, I turned around on Friday and used it again, and it was a disaster. So it's been up and down, up and down, up and down. The squat suit, not as bad. I got in the squat suit, and although I don't feel comfortable in it 100%, it doesn't feel foreign to me. I've had about 3 sessions in it. They've all went pretty well. Same thing goes for the deadlift suit. And how I'm doing it right now is I'm only using gear once a week with one exception. I used the bench shirt twice a week last week. But my situation is possibly different than folks. You know, if you've ever seen the movie Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, when George Clooney's trying to order, I think it's like his hair jelly. And the guy tells him he can get it in 2 or 3 days, everything he can get in 2 or 3 days. It's a geographical oddity, he says. Well, that's where I live. It's like a geographical oddity. I live in a rural area in Florida, and anybody that I could train with is like 40 minutes away. My coach Dave, 40 minutes away in Tampa. Tommy Fannin in Tampa Barbell, about 40 minutes away. Rick Lawrence and his guys over in Newport Richey, about 40 minutes away. So, you know, if I had training partners and a little, you know, group that I could rely on, myself personally, I would probably try to train in gear more than once a week just to see how I would react to it. But right now, you know, I'm kind of at the mercy of others' schedule, particularly my coach Dave Bates. And so what we're doing is I'm training in gear each of the disciplines once a week, and then I continue to train raw the other 2 days.
You've previously mentioned the sort of difficulty of training in gear because you need to rely on other people for help. Other than what you mentioned about needing to be an example for working in single ply, has anything else changed? You know, because if you do still need to find people out, isn't that an inconvenience?
Well, yes, it's a huge inconvenience for me. You know, others may not have the same problem. You know, I know the guys at Tampa Barbell, you know, when I first lifted there years ago, it was not that big of a deal for them. Many of the guys didn't live too far from the gym. You know, for me, it was 40 minutes there, a couple hours at the gym, 40 minutes back. That's actually the point that you make is one of the reasons why I decided to leave geared lifting back in 2007. This we casually call powerlifting, this passion of ours, a hobby. You know, I don't like that word because I think it takes away it takes away the actual hard work and all the desire and determination and sweat that a lot of folks put into the sport. So to call it a hobby, I think is almost like a slap in the face. But the truth is that this sport of ours doesn't have a very good way to make a professional living. You know, I mean, you know, a guy can, you know, try to generate some income on the side and make a personal business and so on and so forth, but it's hard to do. So, you know, at some point, a guy's got to be realistic. All right, you know, I love powerlifting, but, you know, I'm not going to relocate my family to be, you know, 10 minutes away from a training facility for a sport that, you know, I probably pay more than it pays me every year. So for me, you know, based on where I live and the whole bit, it just became more enjoyable to not have to schedule around somebody else's schedule or, you know, make sure that I had 3 or 4 guys around that could not only help me into my suit, but, you know, help spot me. So that's one of the reasons I made the switch from multiply lifting to raw back in 2007. Now, again, by no means is this me trying to, you know, say that everybody should do this. There are lots of folks that I know that have great support structures, great, you know, gym atmospheres, and they've got plenty of guys that they can rely on. You know, Orlando Barbell is a prime example. All right, Brian Schwab and Brian Tincher over there in Oviedo have a super team of guys that, you know, are always ready to help. You know, so when Brian goes to the gym, you know, the odds of him getting some guys to put on his shirt and spot him and so on and so forth is pretty high, you know, as opposed to somebody like me who doesn't really have that environment at their disposal so easily. You know, if I had a setup like that, maybe my thoughts would be different. Maybe my, you know, choice to compete Raw would be different. But it is a part of the sport. And to be successful in single ply or multi-ply or Raw, I mean, you've got to practice how you play. And for geared lifting, that means getting in the equipment, learning how to manipulate it. You know, how does it feel on your body? So on and so forth. And the smart way to do that is to have guys that, number one, lift the same way you do so they can help advise you what you're doing right and what you're not doing right. And number two, you've got the safety factor, you know, spotters. I don't care how great a lifter anybody is. Even Wade Hooper needs spotters. So, you know, it's a choice for me to lift Raw most of the time because it fits my lifestyle best. But, you know, there are plenty of other guys who have it completely different than I do. You know, I sometimes envy those guys, but, you know, it is what it is.
You've talked about not wanting to define yourself within just one genre of powerlifting. Could you see a formation of a yearly triple crown like competition where lifters face off in different events using single ply, multi ply, and then Raw?
Yeah, that's been kicked around for a couple of years now. I personally think it's a fascinating idea. I don't know that it'll ever take hold because it requires such different planning and programming of one's training. I mean, I think there's a lot of correlation between training Raw and training in single ply gear. This comes from my personal experience. This is also, you know, comes from other lifters that I've talked to over the years. Multi-ply lifting is a little bit different in the sense that, well, first of all, if you're going to squat, you need a piece of equipment that is different than the previous two, and that's a monolift. And, you know, although monolifts are more prevalent today, they're still, you know, few and far between. You're going to need more spotters with multi-ply lifting as well. It requires more gear, which requires more money. So, you know, although it looks great on paper to have, you know, this triple crown, I don't know how many lifters would be that crazy about it because to be quite honest, it would be just really, really brutal on the lifter. You know, you've got Raw training you'd have to do, and then you'd have to switch gears to single ply, and then, you know, to multi-ply. You'd really have to have a great, I think, support structure, a decent amount of disposable income, and enough time to try to be successful at all three. But, you know, if somebody were to step into the sport, you know, like what a Dana White did for the UFC, if somebody were to step in and say, those will be Raw and one will be single ply and one will be multi ply, you know, very similar to, you know, the three different circumstances of the Triple Crown for horse racing. I as a competitor, sure, bring it on. That sounds neat, you know. But I, as a meet director, that's bigger than my resources. That would require somebody who just has more at their disposal, because, you know, I can speak from experience. The Raw Unity meet, you know, takes so much of my time. I could only imagine to multiply that by a factor of three. But yeah, it's a wonderful idea. I'd love to see it grow. I would be all for it as a competitor. I think it'd be great. In this time, in this day and age, powerlifting being what it is, I think it'd be great.
So basically, if someone listening can come up with a way to manage the complexity and the permutations they should step forward, basically.
I think as shallow as this may sound, money talks. If somebody had the right amount of money, I bet you would see Sean Frankel competing raw and single ply on top of multiply. You know, I bet you'd see Wade Hooper going raw and multiply. You know, Ryan Selle putting on the multiply because money talks. I mean, in the end, here are the common threads. It's still the sport of powerlifting, however changed or, you know, bastardized it may be. It's still the squat, the bench, and the deadlift. And it's still competition. You know, you're going to find, and I kind of, you know, mentioned this earlier, single ply lifting, raw lifting, multiply lifting. It's all about winning for the top guys. They want to win. It's competition. And so when you tell a multiply guy that, you know, maybe he can't win in single ply or raw, anybody that doesn't take that personally isn't a competitor. They all do. All right. I talk to these guys and, you know behind the scenes, it's man to man. I know what they think. They think the same way I do. We're all competitive. It doesn't matter if it's powerlifting or, you know, shuffleboard. It's the same thing. Guys that are competitive want to win. So you bring somebody in who says, okay, you guys want to be competitive. I'm going to offer all this money for all you guys to go at it. The top lifters will rise to the top. They will scrap and claw and, you know, it doesn't matter. Single, raw, multiply. In the end, it's still powerlifting. It's still trying to move the most weight within the rules of that meet or that federation, and it's still competition. You want to beat everybody else. And, you know, I think powerlifters sometimes lose themselves on those two points, and that's another reason why, you know, there's so much bickering. You know, in the end, those two things always stay the same.
From reading some of your older training logs at Elite FTS, you seem to take the process of restoration really seriously. Talk about some of the things that you did or still do to sort of help you get back under the bar after difficult sessions.
Well, I think, and I'm going to just speak in general terms here, if an individual does not choose to use any sort of anabolic enhancers, be it legal or illegal, then restoration becomes that much more important, because one of the primary things that anabolics will do is they will help your ability to recover from one workout to the next. Having said that, some of the things that I find to be the most effective in terms of restoration, and probably the most effective thing for me, is just walking my dogs every morning and evening. You know, I caught hell over at Elite FTS because I'd put that in my log, walking my dogs morning and evening.
I was going to ask about that.
Yeah, well, okay, think about it for a second, though. All right, I'm walking two dogs that go about 90 pounds, all right? And we're walking about an hour at a very brisk pace. I don't know exactly how much ground we cover in an hour, but it's a lot. You know, to do that twice a day, every day, rain, you know, sun, shine, whatever, we're always out. It's like the postal service. Okay, that tremendously helps to get my blood flowing by walking. My heart rate is up, not to a point where I can't talk, but, you know, it conditions my heart, it conditions my body to just, you know, be in decent physical shape. Now, you know, I've had folks visit me, not particularly lifters, just average people. They'll go on the walk with my wife and I and the dogs, and they can't keep up. After 15 minutes, they're breathing heavy, and they're just about ready to roll over. I have had some lifters that they're not that bad, but they haven't been able to keep up for the whole entire hour. And so just think to yourself for a minute. If your cardiovascular health was a little bit better, if you could, you know, walk that 30 minutes or mile or hour, however long, if you could do that, and still be able to train hard in the gym, What's that going to do for your overall work capacity? Well, 9 times out of 10, it's going to raise it, all right? So two things are going on here. Number one, your ability to do more work in the gym has now probably increased because your heart is in better shape and your body's ability to function under stress has gotten better. All right, couple that with the fact that, you know, walking and moving blood throughout the body, increasing and improving circulation helps to promote recovery. And, you know, add those two things together, now you've got, you know, a person who has created an environment that is much more conducive to building strength as opposed to the individual who can't walk for 15 or 30 minutes at a brisk pace, who has to stop and is out of breath and so on and so forth. So the walking the dogs consistently, twice a day, every day, I think is good for overall health, and it's great for my ability to recover in the gym. Now, beyond that is eating right. You know, and I'm a metabolic typing advisor. I've been doing metabolic typing for years. I know that it works. You know, not only does it work on me, I've seen it work on countless numbers of lifters. Okay, what you eat makes a difference, all right? We, you know, as athletes eat 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times a day, okay? You can't honestly tell me that putting crap down your pie hole multiple times a day is good for you. It's not, okay? It's bad for your health, which is going to translate not to being a bad lifter, but it's not going to create an optimal environment for you to, you know, get stronger, build lean muscle, stay lean, so on and so forth. So, you know, right behind walking and just keeping general good cardiovascular health is eating right. You know, if anybody, you know, wants to, you know, research metabolic typing, they can go to my website. They can Google the metabolic typing diet by Bill Walcott. They can get a general idea of what it's about. I'm happy to answer any questions anybody may have about it. You know, it puts you in one of three categories, a protein type, a carb type, or a mixed type. And I guarantee you, if you eat right for your type, not only are you going to feel better and have more energy, your ability to recover from one workout to the next is going to increase. And anybody who wants to get stronger, who's serious about getting stronger, should take all aspects of training seriously, and that includes recovery. So you've got walking the dogs, you've got eating right for your type, and then beyond that, there's many other things that I incorporate. You know, I do extra workouts from one time to the next during the year, what I like to refer to as like special preparatory exercises, developmental ones. That helps to condition the muscles even further that you're using for the main workouts. I use contrast showers. Very hot water, then very cold water. What that does is it increases circulation, and very similar to walking, improves your cellular turnover, which is going to improve the body's ability to recover. I also wear occasionally at night the medical socks that patients with, you know, that have swelling feet wear, because it helps to improve circulation back to the heart. I use meditation throughout the day to help to not only control my mind, but to, you know, lower my heart rate and get back in touch with the moment. I think it's very easy in this day and age to be thinking either too far in the future or dwelling on something in the past. Meditation very much teaches me to be in the moment, which I think is very important for any athlete when they're competing. I also use various baths throughout the year. Pine scent bath, which helps to restore the central nervous system. I use baking soda and Himalayan salt baths. I use food-grade hydrogen peroxide baths, apple cider vinegar baths. I use various cleansing modalities throughout the year to keep my organs, my colon healthy. So yes, recovery is a huge part. It should be a huge part of any athlete's regiment, but it's that much more important, or it's my belief that it's that much more important for those athletes who are looking for an edge or who don't decide to use any anabolic assistance and so on and so forth. So, for me, recovery is huge, and it makes a difference. I can tell you without a doubt that over the years, my ability to create an environment that's conducive to strength for me has increased and gone up because of the recovery modalities that I incorporate.
I've heard an idea recently that talks about there might not be something such as overtraining. There might actually be a concept of under-recovery. Does that seem to make sense at all?
Yeah, I mean, it's semantics, though. I mean, technically, if you want to be, you know, very, very simple and black and white about it, we've got anabolic and catabolic phases, okay? The catabolic phase is when we break down, okay? We're breaking down muscle tissue or whatever. We're breaking down. That can apply to weight training. That can apply to working in the yard. That can apply to somebody that has cancer, okay? Anabolic, is the rebuilding of that process, okay? That's increasing recovery for an athlete. If you're really in tune with your body, you can kind of try to gauge, you know, when does catabolism end, when does anabolism begin, and when do I go back to beating the body up? But, you know, that's such an individual thing. I mean, you'll talk to one person, and they'll tell you that they've been training 6 days a week, balls to the wall, for 10 years, and they continue to get stronger, and overtraining is just for sissies and wimps. You'll talk to another guy who will tell you that for him, over time, he's found that it's necessary to waive his training, to have weeks that are very hard, followed by weeks that are not as hard, to incorporate recovery modalities, to take a week off here and a week off there to refresh not only the body but the mind. So this is such an individual thing that the only way to really achieve the true answer for that individual is to try it all, evaluate, and figure out what works best. But what you alluded to is semantics, okay? You know, overtraining, under recovery, it's the same thing. You are training again too hard before your body has completely and totally recovered. And that's why we do the recovery modalities and planned training the way that we do. We try to take all those factors into account. But again, you know, the ability of my body to withstand central nervous system stresses as well as any other stresses I place on my body is going to be completely and totally different from your ability to do those things. And the only way to really truly find out, I think, is just, you know, time under the bar, you know, trying everything out. Okay, I'm going to train super hard for, you know, 6 days a week, and I'm going to do all these things, and I'm going to see what happens. Okay, at the end of 8 or 9 weeks, that didn't work for me. I either didn't gain strength or actually went backward. Well, that's not the answer. So then you try something at the other end of the spectrum, and ultimately, guys and gals that stay in this sport over
Eric, are you still there? Hello? 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 Can you hear me?
Where did I go out, Luke? All of a sudden, I just my phone was dead.
You were about halfway into sort of the difference in the way that people recover, sort of the differences between people. I mean, we have over 40 minutes, so I think that that's probably good. It just doesn't have a wrap up. I mean, I'll leave it up to you if you're comfortable with that or if not.
Well, how have you been wrapping them up? I know that you did one with Chris Janik, but I haven't been.
Yeah, I mean, basically, I just gave them the opportunity to say anything they wanted to say, plug a website or a product or something like that. I mean, I know if Mike hosts it, he'll put links up and whatever else. But the problem is just the way that the interviews are stored. You can't like go back and record another one. It can only store one at a time. So.
Okay. Well, whatever you think, I can probably wrap it in 2 minutes if you want to. You know, give me that.
Let's see. I just don't know how it would work. I would have to. I could try to download the one that's up there and then just do a closing, and then just sing them together. I guess.
We can get it on tape. If you can't get it together, then you can't. You know, and if you can, you've got it.
Okay. Let me just see if I can download what we just did real quick. I learned just recently that you can only store one at a time, and if you were to try to do more than one, it would just delete the other one, which would
that would be
good after everything we just covered. That was
right.
Very useful, I think. Just a second here.
You said you used to follow my Elite or my log at Elite.
I did, yeah.
Why? Just, you know, curious.
I had difficulty following some of the much bigger guys. I'm not that big myself, and I just couldn't relate to any of the numbers that they were posting.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, my speed weight is 300 pounds heavier than anything I've ever lifted. And I was like, well, not much point in that.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are some other guys that I looked at, but your stuff was definitely different, and I appreciated that. So.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you checking it out.
For sure. Looking, this doesn't seem to be updated. The free conference call. So I guess right now we'll just stick with what we have, and you know, if we need to write some text or put some links up, we could probably do that. I'm concerned about losing the call at this point. So
yeah, okay. We certainly don't want to do that.
No, and I apologize. I'm not sure what could have happened. Cell phone.
Oh, who knows? I've had situations where I've just lost calls on my end before, so. I'm sure if there's any weak link, it's my phone over the conference calling stuff.
Okay. Well, that's good to know in the future, I guess. But I'm sure we'll make it work, and, you know, we'll get some attention for Raw Unity going forward, hopefully.
Oh, yeah. That's great. You know, that's our whole idea, try to spread it to the masses.
Absolutely. Well, I don't need to take up any more of your time, but I certainly appreciate it on a Sunday.
Yeah, you're not taking my time. I enjoy this stuff. I'm honored and happy you asked. I'm very happy.
All right,
that I had
good
the
deal.
Opportunity,
well,
really.
Hopefully we can do it again before too long.
Okay, Luke. Well, you have a good rest of your Sunday.
All right, will do. Take care.
All right, bye.